You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Packernet Podcast. I am your host and resident panelist, as always, Ryan Schlipp. Check us out online, packernet.com. Find me on Twitter, pack_data. Start off with a little bit of good news today. Eric Wilson has been re-signed by the Green Bay Packers. This apparently was confirmed by Wilson himself. He posted on his Instagram, another year with the Pack, let's go. Don't have any details, although it doesn't really matter. The guy's not going to make much more than minimum, but I think it's definitely worth it. Not only is it linebacker depth, but he is one of our core special teamers and one of the better special teamers in the NFL. So that felt like an incredibly necessary move for the Packers to make. On the not so positive side of things, I mean, you know, in a very strictly rivalry sort of sense, I guess it's good for the Packers. Cam Sutton was not only cut by the Detroit Lions, but he's in some serious legal trouble. He was their number one corner last year, not necessarily in terms of talent, but in terms of snap counts. Brian Branch was the only competent DB or at least cornerback that they had on the team. He ended with a 49 coverage grade, but still 1,261 snaps. He was going to come into the season, presumably as their CB1. And he was cut. Here's some details on that from Mr. PFT.
Cam Sutton, who played 6 years with the Steelers, signed with the Lions last year. He was released by the team yesterday. He is wanted in the aftermath of an incident that happened in Florida on March 7. More than 2 weeks later, he has still not been found. The Lions decided, 2 weeks into this process, to sever ties with Cam Sutton. I'm told that under his contract, they did invalidate full guarantee of $10.5 million for this year that became fully vested last week. $9 million was already covered. The other $1.5 million vested on March 16. That's all gone now. I've seen the language in the contract. They're within their rights to say, under these circumstances, your guarantee is gone. You are gone. He is cut by the Lions, and he's got bigger issues to deal with now. He's facing a third-degree felony charge. He's accused of domestic battery. And that needs to be resolved first. The NFL will have its say at the appropriate time, but the career of Cameron Sutton, who started every game last year for the Lions, Miles, has been significantly derailed.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I mean, you read the allegations, they're really heinous. And so from that standpoint, I think it's obvious that Detroit made the right decision. And, you know, look, again, there are allegations, and so that criminal process has to play out. But that doesn't mean that Detroit has to sit by and not do anything about it. So they did. They made their decision. And so I guess we'll see how it plays out from here.
And you're right. There are allegations. Cameron Sutton has the full scope of constitutional rights that will be afforded to him at the appropriate time. The fact that he is gone, the fact that he is wanted, the fact that he hasn't turned himself in to launch an aggressive defense based upon the true state of affairs that he has confidence he'll be able to prove, or more accurately, the state won't be able to prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, it kind of makes a person with basic common sense say, he must know. You don't just disappear for 2 weeks. if you don't have a pretty good feeling, you got a problem here. But we'll see. Once he is apprehended, once he's brought to justice, he'll have the benefit of all protections of the justice system, and we'll see what happens. But beyond that, the NFL will have its say, and it's not a good look from the NFL's perspective, given the allegations and given the behavior and the aftermath of it. So now a former Lion, that's a starting job on the defense that the Lions will need to fill for 2024. Hi, it's Mike Florio.
So, I mean, to be clear, I think you could argue cornerback was probably a need to begin with, but now it just became, I mean, not only is it a need because we don't have somebody that's super great, and again, I'm not talking about their slot guy, Brian Branch, but their boundary corners, they have them and they're not good. Now they just don't have them. So obviously pretty serious situation there. Don't know the status on that. They think he fled to the Tampa area. I don't know. I guess we'll find out, but presumably his NFL career is completely over. All right, I want to get a little bit into the draft today, but before I do, there's one thing that's kind of bugging me. And again, we've already kind of touched on it. I mentioned it might happen. I don't know why I'm annoyed that it's happening. I said that it wouldn't take long before the Bears get catapulted to the top because Caleb Williams is going to be amazing. He's going to be da-da-da-da-da. I said it last freaking year. But, I mean, before they even draft the guy, I just, ugh. Anyways, I just want to play a couple clips here that just bothered me for different reasons. This one has less to do with Caleb Williams succeeding, although the title of it is Rich Eisen, Why Chicago Bears Are Set Up to Succeed with Caleb Williams. It's just the way everything is framed that just annoys the crap out of me. Listen, and again, I will concede the Bears might be really good. You got maybe the best wide receiver duo, which, by the way, my bad, yesterday's podcast completely forgot Jordan Addison existed. This doesn't change the rankings because the Vikings are still on top, but I had a resident Vikings fan. I always know as soon as I talk about the Vikings, he's going to have a big, long list of things that he disagrees with me on about what I said, but that's why I got to be careful when I talk Vikings. But he's like, bro, Jordan Addison. I was like, oh, crap, I forgot about him. But still, I had him at the top anyways. Anyways, potentially the best wide receiver duo, if not second best behind Minnesota this year, right? And then if Caleb is awesome, the offensive line is okay. It's nowhere near as bad as everybody said it was because Justin Fields made it look worse than it was, but it's not great. Decent running back. And, you know, a defensive-minded head coach that kind of got something going a little bit last year. I think it's an overrated defense, but it's a decent enough I mean, they might be a decent team. I'm willing to concede that to some degree, but at least frame it properly. And everything Rich says here just annoys the crap out of me. And I don't know why the guy bothers me so much. I think it's because he's so... maybe arrogant is the wrong word, but I don't think it is. He's unbelievably confident in what he says. Like, he's got this sort of faux swagger to him. And it's like, man, if you're going to be that cocky with every word you say, you better be dead on. And I hated every word that he said. So here's the first part that annoys the living crap out of me. I'm kind of starting mid-sentence here, but he's explaining how Bears fans are starting to understand what's happening with Caleb Williams. Like, it's kind of a shocking thing, but they're starting to get it. I'll just pick it up right here.
Bears fans do have the, cauterized wounds of some other quarterbacks that didn't pan out. I mean, Mitchell Trubisky, that might be the whole, if Caleb Williams is the guy that we're expecting him to be, that would finally, I think, take the Mitchell Trubisky
stench.
Hold on a minute. I'll say this potentially right, although the post-traumatic Trubisky disorder.
PTTB?
I don't know.
I was just going to say wounds of Trubisky.
Wounds of Trubisky is a great, it's the wounds of Trubisky, which is, I think, was that a Simon and Garfunkel song? Is that on the flip side of Sounds of Silence?
it's the B-side.
Wounds of Trubisky. So I think Caleb would finally get that out of the minds of, we traded up to get a quarterback, and Mahomes was left on the board. As if you knew what Mahomes is going to turn into. Nobody knew what Tom Brady would turn into. That's the vagaries of the draft, in the same way that, the Jets thought they were made in the Zach Wilson shade, and Trey Lance was going to bring some sort of a quarterback 2.0 game to San Francisco. I get it. I understand. But I think Bears fans, you should realize, trust me, I wish the Jets were sitting in this position, being able to get Caleb Williams. You too with New England. That's the exact answer.
All right. Anyways, can somebody explain why, what the heck he's talking about with Trubisky? I know he did explain that that was somewhat unique because Pat Mahomes was there. I get that. But then he goes on to talk about other teams where there are wounds that have nothing to do with Pat Mahomes or anything else. The thing that annoys me is pretending that the quarterback wounds for Bears fans come from Mitch Trubisky. First of all, the current deep wounds reside in the fact that Justin Fields was a failure. Not Mitch Trubisky. That was two quarterbacks ago. Some of their fans still can't even let it go. They're still convinced he's the right pick and he's the wrong guy. There's tearful goodbye videos out there right now. It's pandemonium and chaos. Complete and utter denial, if not just shock, awe, disdain, and despair. So we don't need to go back two quarterbacks ago. We could easily crap on Justin Fields, but no, we can't do that. We can't crap on the all-powerful Justin Fields. We got to go back to frickin' Trubisky, who, as I've said, was a better quarterback than Justin Fields anyways. But even bigger than that, are you freaking kidding me? The wounds are deeper than Trubisky and Fields. It's the fact that they've never had a good quarterback in their entire life. I just don't understand why so much is being put on Trubisky, the wounds of Trubisky. Bro, what are you talking about? I don't think very many Bears fans are wounded by Trubisky at this point. And even if you want to point out the Pat Mahomes thing, I'm sorry, they could have had CJ Stroud just this past year. Not to mention we could go back all throughout history and point out numerous players the Bears could have drafted, including guys like Aaron Rodgers, but passed on. They could have had Jordan Love. They could have had, half the good quarterbacks in the NFL right now could have been Chicago Bears if the Bears didn't pass on them. Should look into that. How many quarterbacks currently could the Bears have had, but chose not to? That'd be fantastic to look into. So anyway, that was the first thing that bothered me. What are you talking, the wounds of Trubisky? Why are you putting that on the shoulders of Trubisky? You're first of all, again, completely ignoring Fields, which you know is going to annoy me. When it happened, 13 seconds ago. Second of all, you're massively minimizing the deep wounds that Bears fans have for quarterbacks in general, and you're minimizing how negligent that organization has been by just pretending, it's just this random fluky thing happened with Trubisky, and Bears fans are upset about it, but they're going to get this guy, and it's going to be great. No, they've never had a good quarterback in their entire franchise history ever. Then he goes on to explain why the Bears are actually in a pretty good position. And listen, he starts off by saying, look, it's not like you're the one in whatever team like Carolina and you're in a total rebuild. And that's true. That's entirely true. They're not at the bottom. They're kind of middle of the pack. But I just the way he says stuff.
Ryan Poles has had a couple of years head start and has, in fact, utilized last year's trade so brilliantly.
Okay. Utilized the trade brilliantly. How did he utilize it brilliantly? What has he done with it? What did he do with the trade? We act as though he maneuvered to the number one spot. No, he lucked into that. I just want to freaking...
And has added some pieces in free agency. And I remember when Roquan Smith got traded away, we were even wondering, what's he up to?
Yeah. What you mean when he traded away a linebacker that went to Baltimore and was one of the top linebackers in football, and then he spent $17 million for a guy that plays like crap, which I said was going to happen because it was obvious. It was just sitting there for all to see. But apparently the GM of the Bears is the one guy that couldn't see it.
Why would you take somebody like him? That's the guy you build around.
Why would you? I still don't know the answer.
They have done a great job.
What's the answer, Rich? Well, because he wants to build. Build what? He just replaced him with a more expensive guy. That sucks. So what's the answer to the question? It's not like, well, we don't want to pay our linebacker so that we can save up and spend money elsewhere. And spend money on what? An old freaking one-year replacement at wide receiver or an old safety to come in and do some patchwork for a year. The Bears are playing like it's an all-in strategy. And I've already explained the reason that he's doing this. Why in the world would a team that's a couple years out that might actually be a long-term contender if you play it right, if you get some 24, 25, 26-year-olds, if you draft and develop well, you can be a good team not just this year but for the long term. Why are you pretending this is an all-in year? Because he knows he's on the verge of getting fired if this doesn't pan out. So he needs the team to perform well this year. So that's what he's building toward. But it's not going to help you in the long term. It's a bad strategy.
The back end of that defense is young and
ball. No, it's not. What do you mean the back end is young? It's young and ball hawking, he says.
Hawking, the front end of that
defense. Yeah, young and ball hawking. No. They have one corner that got paid $1 billion that is going to regress. He will not be the number one corner in football because you just don't replicate that. So he'll probably be a good corner, but not that good. Just like Jair and Xavier Howard and all the other guys that are up there for a year. The guy in Dallas who was up there for a year and hasn't been good since. And then what? You've got a safety that you traded away or cut and got signed elsewhere. You've got another safety that's mid at best, and then you went out and got a really old guy to come in and be your free safety for a very short period of time, probably a year. What do you mean young and ball hawking? What are you talking about? Who's young and ball hawking? There's one guy that I'm aware of. I don't even know if he's ball hawking. Probably. That's how he got to be the number one guy. But again, it's not going to repeat itself.
Defense can rush the passer. Eberflus is the guy who runs that.
The front of the defense can rush the passer. Who can rush the passer? Who? What are you talking about, Rich Eisen? You got Montez Sweat. Okay, great. What else? What's one other person that can rush the passer anywhere on that front? He drafted two interior guys. How did they do? Javon Dexter had 29 pressures on 300 attempts with 4 sacks, so he's sub 10%. Zach Pickens was even worse. He had 8 pressures and a sack on 150 attempts, so he's at like 5%. DeMarcus Walker, the other edge rusher, was sub 10% and 4 sacks. Andrew Billings is sub 10%, 0 sacks. Who are you talking about? And even Sweat, I mean, his grades were not super great in Chicago. He had a 68 PFF grade. But if you look at the stats, they look fine, but there's a problem. They all came in 3 games, right in the middle of his time in Chicago. Against Minnesota, 7 pressures, 2 sacks. The next week against Detroit, 6 pressures, 2 sacks. Against Cleveland, 7 pressures, 3 sacks. Do you know how many sacks he got in his other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games? 1. 0 against New Orleans, 0 against Carolina, 1 against Detroit, 0 against Arizona, 0 against Atlanta, 0 against Green Bay. So he had a flurry of sacks in 3 games and didn't do jack squat outside of that. He's not a consistent player. He's boom or bust, and mostly bust. So who is it that can rush the pass? What do you? They don't have a young secondary. They don't have a ball hawking secondary. They don't have a front that can rush the passer. What exactly is it you think he's building right now? I don't know what you're talking about. Again, I'm fine giving them credit where it's due, but don't just make up crap to make him sound better than he is. He's a GM that has been well below average. Just because he's got some high picks and hasn't completely busted them, although he kind of did because he passed on C.J. Stroud and he lucked into getting the number one overall pick for the second year in a row because Carolina is just that inept, even though they had it last year and couldn't do jack squat with it aside from getting this quote-unquote haul, which has produced nothing up to this point except giving them a mulligan on the number one overall pick. We'll see if they can capitalize on it this year. I don't know what it is we're giving polls all this credit for. Don't just make things up. Then he just has to throw it out there again.
Mitchell Trubisky's not walking through that door. Caleb Williams is, and I think that's a significant difference.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. Although, again, could have just as easily said Justin Fields is not walking through that door, right? Why are we skipping over him again? Why are we skipping over the most recent quarterback failure to go back to Trubisky? Can anybody explain that to me? What is the purpose of that? Why are we picking on Trubisky, who hasn't thrown a pass for the Chicago Bears in, what, 3 years? What is the purpose of this? Why are we protecting this guy? I'm just curious. Anyways, let's take a break. I've got another video queued up that basically is the exact same thing. It's, you know, I wish I could just give them credit. Like I do with the Vikings and Lions, like I give them credit, but it's just speak honestly about the situation. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. Play that, get that off my chest, and then we'll start looking at a little bit of NFL draft. We'll be right back. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. A company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know what we should do? We should make this a game. We should make it a game where, like, I play a clip and it's called something like, "Why does this tick off Pack Daddy?" Like, see if you can guess why this annoys me. Here we go.
Like, it's been, even by crazy NFL standards, I feel like the free agency period in terms of both the trades and player movement has been really nutty. But to me, the nuttiest thing, and I don't really see a lot of people talking about this specific thing, is it's like player, maybe I'm just way off, but just some of these trades in terms of what some people are getting and then other people getting. I get it that Keenan Allen is both expensive and, as NFL players go, on the older side.
Yep.
But he's Keenan freaking Allen. And to get him for a four, that strikes me as, I know that the Chargers were cash-strapped and they needed to make some sort of move, but Connor, I mean, a four strikes me as really a really good deal for the Chargers.
It's wild. I mean, to just, this is a franchise legend.
I'm
rooting
for the Bears. A really good deal for...
Just wanted to let him get that clarification in. All right. So he only said one thing, so I'm assuming we can all understand. I don't know why this would be hard to understand. For those of you that are maybe on his side of this at this particular point in time where it's like, yeah, I don't get it either. A four for Allen. I mean, if we think about it in terms of, would you expend a fourth round pick to be able to get Keenan Allen, you know, for however many years or whatever? Looking at what he did for the Chargers, yeah, I mean, I understand that. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a 1 year, 21 million? Come on. 23.1 is how much it's going to cost the Bears. $23.1 million. They gave up a fourth round pick so that they could get a 1 year rental of a 32-year-old wide receiver and have the privilege of, so that they could have the privilege of paying $23 million for a 32-year-old receiver. They gave up a fourth round pick for that. If we just think about it in terms of Keenan Allen is so good, is he fourth round pick good? That's not how you look at it, though. It's his production, his age, and how long you're going to be able to keep him, and how much you're paying him. Giving up a fourth-round pick for the privilege of paying $23 million for a 32-year-old wide receiver is stupid. I would never do that. Let me put it in these terms. Would you rather have 10 years of Zach Tom or 1 year of Keenan Allen for $23 million? The fact that nobody values draft picks is stupid to me. The fact that this guy doesn't get it, and I understand, like, this whole show, I believe, is like a fantasy football thing, so maybe that's why they don't understand things. But the fact that he starts off by saying, I know that he's expensive and I know that he's old by NFL standard. No, forget that. Don't try to quantify it like, well, kind of, sort of, technically. Bull crap. He's 32 years old. You never. And again, why is Chicago doing this? Because he doesn't care about finding the next Zach Tom. He will happily give away the prospect of finding a very good prospect in the fourth round for a one-year rental of Keenan Allen because he wants this year to go well. That is stupid. You know why they got him for a fourth? Because nobody else was willing to give that much. You think, well, maybe they're going to keep him for longer than that. That's true. They might. But if they were going to, why wouldn't they? As in today. Give him a contract today and you can lower that cap number. Why aren't they doing that? Because they don't know if they want him for more than a year. That hasn't been determined. Now, if he plays really well this year, they might give him another extension. But the fact of the matter is they didn't trade that for an expectation of anything more than a year. Possibly more? Sure. Definitely more? No, it might just be 1 year. And they're happy giving a fourth round pick for that. That's stupid. And to sit around and gush as though they got some kind of an unbelievable steal. Man, Poles is cooking. Poles and Justin Fields, man, I swear there has never been more unearned gushing ever in the history of the universe. Well, probably some presidents and whatnot, but aside from that, just genuinely don't understand it. I don't know. Boy. The best I can think is to say what maybe is obvious to many people, and that is essentially that a lot of people, maybe even most of the people in the media, a lot of the people even at the top of the media, are, I mean, just completely casuals. They're all just casuals. They're the people that want to give away all the picks for all the big-name players. They would have, I mean, he would have happily given up a second-round pick for a year of Keenan Allen. Just insane to me. Now, I think a lot of maybe the local media guys, the guys on the beat, the guys that cover the Packers and whatnot, probably smarter than that. Not going at that, but just the guys at the top who are just saying stuff to say stuff. Just the big headline guys, the Rich Eisens, and who the heck is this? This is NFL on NBC, Matthew Berry, Jay Croucher, and Connor Rogers. I mean, come on, guys. This shouldn't have to be explained to you why this is not a great deal. Like, they go on to be like, I'm surprised that's all the Chargers could get. Well, you shouldn't be. I mean, look, honestly, even if the Chargers are eating most of this salary cap, it's still questionable whether it would be worth a fourth-round pick unless you genuinely believe that you could get multiple years out of this guy. If he was basically free and you thought, hey, we might be able to get 2-3 years possibly, maybe he can play until he's 35, now we can start talking about it. But for 1 year, I mean, unless you suck as a GM and you're like, I don't think I can do anything, I'm not going to be able to get any value from a fourth-round pick, then fine, just throw away the fourth-round pick, I guess. Throw away the Colby Wooden, the Zach Tom, the Romeo Doubs, the David Bakhtiari, J.C. Tretter, Mike Daniels. I mean, who needs these guys? T.J. Lang, Josh Sitton. I'd rather spend $23 million for 1 year of a guy that's probably going to be a really good number two wide receiver. Great. Great. Good thinking. You're probably right. You know, you're probably right about that. Jeez, man. All right, I'll move off of that now. Final thing, real quick, before we move on to the draft here. Owners meeting is coming up next week, I think. I just wanted to cover a couple of the topics that are going to be brought up to them. Here is Tom Pelissero talking about that.
Tom. Well, the swivel hip drop tackle is a big one. We know that the NFL, the competition committee, everyone wants it out of the game at a league level and a team level. However, the union has said in the past and doubled down again in a statement yesterday saying they oppose any efforts to outlaw it. And there's multiple reasons for that. You know, among them, just, you know, the consistency of whether or not it gets called. You already have players being fined and players having to appeal and the union being involved in those appeals. And here's one more thing on officials' plates. But it's also, you know, the hip drop, the swivel hip drop tackle, whatever they're calling it now, evolved out of taking the head out of the game. It evolved from Pete Carroll and Hawk tackling that's 10, 12, 15 years old. And that was all about, you know, it came from rugby and it was about getting your head to the side. Grab them, twist your body, and basically roll. You know, it's a grab and roll type of a technique. That then evolved into, okay, guys now dropping their weight onto the back of the ankle. And, you know, the NFL gave a presentation to all of us back at the combine, you know, trying to explain kind of how these would be officiated. And there's some, they showed like a dozen of them. And there were some where you're like, ah, man, like that's clearly, you know, the way Logan Wilson tackles Mark Andrews. We all can look at that and go, you don't want to see that. But there's other ones where it's like a quarterback in the pocket and the pass rusher grabs him from behind. And because he can't drop his weight on him, instead he kind of sinks back and pulls him down. And they're saying that now is also going to be a penalty and a fine. When they began to outlaw this style of tackling in rugby, they actually started with fines, not suspensions, in terms of international rugby leagues. And so could you see guys getting fined as opposed to, you know, penalties within the game as opposed to suspensions? This is all part of the conversation. Usually when the league, when Roger Goodell, when the competition committee wants something, they end up getting it. And so they're saying that it's, you know, it's three components. It's the grab, it's the swivel around the side, and it's dropping your weight on the back of the ball carrier's legs. And they'll probably over-enforce it in the preseason, which is usually what we see. And then by regular season, it kind of, you know, evens out a little bit. So that's going to be a big one.
So a couple things. First of all, as I've said, every time we get the contingent of something must be done, you know, that whole trope, we can't just do nothing. Well, as he said, that contingent of people that said we must do something created this problem, and now they're trying to fix it. And guess what? That's going to create new problems. And you can already see what those problems are going to be. First of all, defenders have no idea how to tackle anymore. They had to develop this way of tackling to try to compensate for the last rule change. Now you're taking that away from them. So that's going to be ridiculous. And then enforcement is going to be horrible on top of the fact that you're talking about fining. So now if you tackle and your head hits somebody or you hit their head in any kind of way, you're going to get fined, ejected, whatever. If you don't do that and you happen to, your weight falls down on a part of their body, you're going to get fined. I mean, it's, and this doesn't even bring to light, okay, what is the new form of tackling going to be and how can that hurt people? This complete inability to acknowledge that you can't just wave a magic wand and make problems go away is staggering to me. Well, we can't just do nothing. Well, you can. That is an option. But here we are. We're going to create new rules on top of rules to take more things away from defenders. We're going to see more penalties, more fines, more of just a bad product. Because nobody's going to know what to do anymore. And on top of just some of these things being enforced correctly and being absurd and upsetting, there's some that are going to be enforced incorrectly. And you're going to see pivotal game time plays. You're going to see sacks that, I mean, remember when they first started this whole, you know, you can't land on a quarterback with your body weight or whatever. We lost two games in the span of like three or four because of terrible calls on Clay Matthews when that first came out. Terrible calls. But this is what we do. I hate to pull out the soft thing because obviously we're talking about pretty serious injuries, et cetera, but I mean, we just, every year we got to play this game where it's like, well, we found new ways for people to get hurt, so we got to change this, and we got to change the turf, and we got to change the tackling, and we got to change the hitting, and we got to change every single thing, and it's like, just freaking put flags on them. You know, I'm sick of this. I don't want to watch flag ball. I'm sorry. If you really care about injuries, take the pads off. Take the pads off. That'll fix the majority of the problems. But you don't want to do that, because it feels like we're going in the wrong direction, even though we're not. So you don't want to do that. You want to keep adding pads. That's going to keep adding to injuries. You want to keep taking away things that can hurt people. It's just going to add more ways to hurt people. We're just in a death spiral. So whatever. This is just the way it goes. We just continue down this path. So get ready for the flags to just increase exponentially.
Going to be discussed. I would anticipate, though, that they're going to push that rule through. If anything, maybe it gets tabled till May, but I don't think hip drop tackles will be allowed in the NFL by the time we get to the fall of 2024. And then kickoffs is another huge one.
Before you get to the kickoffs, though, Tom, didn't the NFLPA already send out a statement saying the language for the hip drop tackle rule change that's out there is it's confusing. There's no way you're going to be able to officiate it properly, and therefore they don't agree with it at all. I mean,
they have a seat at the table in these discussions, but ultimately they don't have a vote. They're in there. They have representatives that are in the meetings at the combine, so they can influence the process. They can make public statements. But if the league wants to do it, the league will do it. And they've made abundantly clear that that's their intention.
And again, it doesn't matter to them if it's a stupid rule, if it can't be enforced, if it doesn't make any sense. The point is, something bad is happening, and they want to put on a public face of being the good guys and doing nice things and prevent taking injury out of the game. So they're going to push it through. That's it. That's the bottom line. Well, how are we going to do this? How does this make it? I don't care. Just do it. Just do it.
The kickoff play is something that special teams coordinators have been tackling for about a decade now because of the injury data and the concussion rate, the injury rate on kickoffs relative to any other play. And it's changed like for the last 5 years. There have been different kickoff rules.
Exactly. Again, we keep thinking there's some magic pill and we're going to fix this thing. And it never does. Everything they do doesn't fix it. It just creates new problems that need to get fixed next year.
What the NFL had last year was...
it's a freaking violent sport. That's what it is. You cannot take the violence out of violence. That doesn't make sense. But here we are.
A non-competitive play, and there were something like, I don't know the exact percentage, but it was really, really low in terms of kickoffs that were returned at all, including zero kickoff returns in the Super Bowl for the first time ever. So what they've done, they don't want it to be called the XFL rule, because we're the NFL and we're not talking about XFL, but it's a variation thereof, where essentially the kicker is still back at the 35-yard line, but all the setup players are on the plus side of the 50. I believe it's the 40 and the 35. And so what you're trying to reduce is all that run-up that creates the force and the velocity that can lead to awkward collisions and can lead to injuries. You're taking that away, and there's all these different permutations of what happens. You know, if you kick the ball into the setup zone versus if you kick it short of the setup zone. If you kick it through the end zone, you're essentially penalized for that. There's unsportsmanlike conducts if certain things happen on kickoffs. There's all kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, what the special teams coordinators wanted to create was a reduction in the speed and space, but preserving enough space you can at least have strategy and you're going to get real returns. And so they were tasked with, how do you increase returns while decreasing the injury rate to a palatable number? They think that they've gotten to a good place on this moving forward. You know, onside kicks, you're going to have to declare it, that the surprise onside kick is going to be dead. There have been proposals put forward a number of times, namely by the Eagles, about a 4th-and-20 alternative and things like that. The league generally has viewed that as gimmicky. Doesn't mean that you can't get there eventually. But, you know, essentially, if you declare an onside kick, everybody's going to come back. It's going to look like what kickoffs looked like last year. So there's a lot there, and there's going to be a lot of discussion about it. But all 32 special teams coordinators were met in person at the combine to go through this. And it's basically, hey, we can't go back. We're never going back. We want to have the kickoff in the game. We have to find a way to make it safer, but also encourage returns. And, you know, in talking to a bunch of the special teams coordinators, I can tell you, on one hand, they're very annoyed because they literally have to create entirely new strategy every year because the rule keeps changing every year. On the flip side of it, now they can earn their paychecks and they can, you know, have a little fun and show some creativity.
That's a douchey comment to say. I think they earn their paychecks as it is. No, it is annoying, and it's obnoxious that you know, and again, we have a bunch of people essentially that don't like football that are put in charge of football. That's my issue. Just hope Roger Goodell's never put in charge of the UFC or boxing or anything. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll start talking about the NFL draft. We'll be right back. So one of the things I've been working on, it kind of started as a little project just for myself. What I wanted to do was, for the sake of mock drafts, just like a first-round mock draft and understanding other teams, what I did was I found the most recent, let's say, 10 mock drafts. And then I give it to the AI, we have a little conversation about it, and it spits out just some information. More or less, what direction does the team seem to be going in and why? You know, fits and this and that and the other. And then I thought, well, this might be kind of interesting for other people. So I started putting them on the Substack. If you're a subscriber over there, then you've already been seeing this. If not, yes, that's a thing. Packernet.substack.com. If you are on Patreon, you should have access to that. If you don't and you want it, let me know. I can get you hooked up. You got to be a high enough tier or whatever, but whatever. We'll get that figured out. Bottom line is, I haven't gotten to the Packers yet, but I thought we should do it, especially since it's going to be a lot more interesting because it's not just one or two prospects. It's a bunch of different prospects. So I went ahead and did it for the Packers just so we can kind of fast forward a little bit. I want to do it in reverse. I want to tell you what the output was and then kind of work backwards because the interesting part isn't so much the answer as it is, well, we'll get there. But here is what the results said. The Green Bay Packers are the 25th overall pick in the draft, are focusing on strengthening their roster across multiple positions with a significant emphasis on offensive line, particularly at the tackle position. The departure of David Bakhtiari has opened up a critical need to protect young quarterback Jordan Love, leading to several mock drafts projecting offensive tackles such as Tyler Guyton, Graham Barton, and J.C. Latham. Additionally, there are considerations for defensive upgrades with names like Cooper DeJean and Leiatu Latu being mentioned to bolster the secondary and pass rush, respectively. Then it goes through some of the prospects. It says Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle, Oklahoma, praised for his unique athleticism for his size. Guyton is seen as a potential day one starter with a high ceiling. His background as a former H-back at TCU adds to his athletic profile, making him an intriguing option for the Packers. Graham Barton, offensive lineman out of Duke, noted for his versatility across the offensive line. Barton's ability to play both guard and center, in addition to tackle, could provide valuable flexibility and immediate impact for Green Bay. And J.C. Latham, offensive tackle out of Alabama, recognized for his strength in the run game. Latham is suggested as a day one starter despite needing improvement in pass protection. Defensive prospects, Cooper DeJean, DB out of Iowa. With his versatility to play in any role in the secondary and being a strong tackler, DeJean is highlighted as a potential steal, especially considering the Packers' recent addition of Xavier McKinney. Leitu Latu, edge rusher out of UCLA. As an edge rusher, Latu is suggested to continue the Packers' trend of focusing on defensive picks in the first round, aiming to enhance their pass rush capabilities. And then I'll just skip down to recommendation. It says, given the strategic need and the insights from the mock draft, selecting an offensive tackle such as Guyton or Graham Barton would be highly advisable for the Green Bay Packers. Both players offer immediate starting potential, with Guyton bringing a unique athleticism and Barton offering versatility across the offensive line. This approach aligns with addressing the critical need left by David Bakhtiari's departure while also supporting the development of Jordan Love by ensuring he has reliable protection. However, the Packers wish to balance their draft strategy between offense and defense, considering a versatile defensive player like Cooper DeJean will also provide beneficial, particularly in enhancing their secondary. So the AI is pushing offensive line. The thing that I liked about this is for a long time, and don't get me wrong, Cooper DeJean is still dominating Green Bay Packers mock drafts. But let me just read to you these, I think, 10 mock drafts and see if you can catch what stands out. First off, we have the Draft Network, and they have us selecting Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle out of Oklahoma. NBC Sports, Cooper DeJean, DB out of Iowa. The, Draft Countdown has Talise Fuaga. We've got PFF. They have us taking Tyler Newbin. The Score has J.C. Latham. 33rd Team has Graham Barton. CBS, I have two different CBS ones. The first one has Ennis Rakestraw. The second one has Latu. NFL Spin Zone has us taking Nate Wiggins. Gridiron Heroics has J.C. Latham. And Sportsnot has Graham Barton. So if I'm not mistaken, only one time did somebody get selected twice, and it wasn't Cooper DeJean, it was Graham Barton. Actually, I think there were two J.C. Lathams also. So I don't know if this is a shift since the departure of David Bakhtiari or what the situation is, but it is rare to see so little consensus, even at 25 for the Packers. And I think overall it's a positive because all of these are picks that people think would be good fits for the Green Bay Packers. Rather than sitting back going, man, I hope they get that one guy. If they don't, I don't know what they're going to do. And so, I mean, we've all got our favorites, right? But at the end of the day, I mean, if I just go through this list after 10, Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, Jared Verse, Olu Fashanu, Fuaga, Byron Murphy, Latu, Brian Thomas, Latham, Wiggins, DeJean, Fatanu, Mims, Jackson Powers-Johnson, Jerzon Newton, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Chop Robinson, Tyler Guyton, Adonai Mitchell, Graham Barton, Xavier Worthy, Darius Robinson. I mean, how many names did I read off that you'd be like, oh, that would just be the worst? I mean, obviously, I don't like Darius Robinson all that much, although I heard Brian Gutekunst was at the Mizzou Pro Day, and that was immediately where my mind went to. So I was like, oh, I guess we're getting them. That or they like my boy Rakestraw still. Like, what's up with that combine, bro? But, I mean, really, I think I would be okay with just about any of these. I mean, Latu makes me nervous, but I think the Packers are going to be more nervous than I am, so I don't think they're even going to do it. Even guys I've been critical of, Jackson Powers-Johnson, would I be upset? No, I wouldn't be upset. It's not even upset. It would just, I'm concerned about potential limitations. It's not even that I know he has them. I worry about potential limitations, but as soon as we get him, it's like, bro, holy crap, we got a horse on the inside of this offensive line. And Graham Barton, I mean, what a prototypical Green Bay Packer, a guy that can play anywhere on the offensive line. I mean, I can already hear that press conference. The very first question for Brian Gutekunst after that pick is going to be, where do you plan on playing Graham Barton? And the answer is going to be something along the lines of, you know, we drafted him because he can play anywhere in all five of those positions. And we're going to get him in there and we're going to find out how to get the best, you know, five offensive linemen on the field. We're going to get that whole thing. And I'm sure there'll be follow-up, like, do you think he could play tackle? Absolutely. We believe he can be a starting offensive tackle in the league, but we've already got some good tackles, so that's a tough competition. But again, we're just going to let him co-compete, and we're going to find out where he can play, and we're confident he'll be playing for us somewhere along the offensive line and adding value. And it's like, as soon as that happens, it's like, we should have known this was the pick all along. So, I mean, look, the Packers are in a great spot. There are not a lot of positions that you would look at and go, that was stupid, we don't need that. If we draft a wide receiver, I'm going to be over the moon. If we get another tight end, if we get anything along the offensive line, if we get a running back, defensive tackle, edge, linebacker, corner, safety, I'm down. Aside from, you know, quarterback, there's not a lot that's going to be super upsetting. So anyways, I'll leave it at that. It's going to be interesting to continue to track this. Again, it was Cooper DeJean season for a very long time. Still is to a large degree, but I wonder if there's some shifting going on, especially along the offensive line. And it'll be interesting to track that and see how that develops, if maybe some other guys start to emerge as top options. But I'll leave it at that. You guys have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.